Welcome to History from the Hill of Peace, a podcast that offers a glimpse into the rich 250-year history of Friedberg Moravian Church. Nestled on the Forsyth and Davidson County line in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, we celebrate generations of God's goodness, faithfulness, and love. Relax and enjoy as our guests take us from Friedberg's roots to where we are today.
Welcome you to this episode of History from the Hill of Peace. We're excited to have you back. As Friedberg Moravian Church celebrates its 250th anniversary, there's so many stories to tell about the church itself, its humble roots, and the people that shaped it. During each episode, we feature a story, we read a Moravian daily text, and we have some surprise visitors that join us along the way. Today, I want to welcome back Jimmy Snyder, our church historian, a voice that we all know so well. So he is part of the church's 250th anniversary committee. He is the leader of the recently expanded historical committee. He's involved in the Moravian Provincial Band, and he's vice president of the Wachovia Historical Society. Jimmy and I are sitting outside of the church's Family Life Center, looking at a beautiful mural that we're going to talk about today. It is humongous. It is the size of the wall, and you cannot miss it if you enter through the main doors here of the Family Life Center. So Jimmy, we're sitting in front of this mural. So I know that there's some stories. I know there's some historical information that are visuals here on this mural. So let's just dive into it. Tell me about this mural.
This mural is exciting. It was commissioned by the church to be put where it is. And it tells the history of Friedberg, and it tells it in one big painting on one big wall. It's amazing how you can go from the very first church here all the way up to our current church, and our current Family Life Center are all depicted in this. Everything that's in this mural is based on fact. Most everything on it, we have pictures of it to back it up in the historical room. And those pictures were used to make this mural. So it's exciting, and I'm just going to start on the lower left, and we'll work our way across it, and I'll try to visually tell you where on the mural it is and what we're looking at, and why it's important to Friedberg, and why it would be part of the Friedberg history. If we start in the lower left, that is a depiction of the Adam and Maria Spock Rock House that was built in 1774. A lot of people think Adam Spock, they came in, the first thing they did was built the rock house. But they had actually lived here 20 years before they built the rock house. We don't know where his original house was, but we know it's somewhere in the vicinity. So if you move up to your upper left as you're looking at the mural, you'll see a log building. That log building represents our first church school worship center. The construction started in 1766. And in fact, Peter Fry was the first burial here in 1776. And the records show that Peter was buried just outside the back door of the new church. The log church was over in what is now the graveyard.
Okay, which is directly across the street from our current main sanctuary.
Right, uh-huh. And in fact, the first two churches were over in what is now the graveyard. That's the reason when you walk in our graveyard in the main entrance, you have headstones from the 50s, 60s, 40s, and then as you go deeper in the graveyard, you get into the really old headstones. And then as you go deeper, you get into the newer stones. And that was because the front section is where the two new churches were, or the two original churches. And then when they got moved across the street, then that opened up that room for the graveyard to be buried, you know, more folks to be buried in it.
Well, that's a fun fact about our God's Acre. I did not know that. So yeah, thanks for sharing that.
First two churches were over there. First church was started in 1766. The second one was started in the 1780s. and they were both log. They were both connected with a breezeway type deal. It's interesting, you can get into some stories about that with Reverend Bockoff and some of the things he did here as our first minister. But anyway, after you leave the log church, it moves you over. As you move to your right, you see a depiction of the 1823 church. And it was two-story. There's a porch involved in it, and the porch is on the lower left of the church. That was the main entrance to the church. At this time, the sanctuary was downstairs, and the parsonage was upstairs. At one time when the church was first built, the parsonage was downstairs and the sanctuary was upstairs.
So at some point, the old church was renovated in a sense where it flip-flopped.
It was renovated several times over the years. So every time they wanted to do something, they renovated and the whole church changed. We were talking earlier about the pulpit chairs down in the historical room. This little outcropping on the end of the 1823 church is where the pulpit was at that time and where those three chairs were located. We also, on a previous podcast, we discussed the weather vane. On this depiction of the 1823 church, the weather vane is on top of the steeple.
There it is, absolutely. And if you want to find out more about that weather vane, if you'll go two episodes back, we talk about it in pretty good detail.
Yes. If you move to your right a little bit more, then it shows the 1823 church with some more modifications. This was the same church as the one just to the left of it. They're the same buildings.
Okay.
But they were renovated. Some people say, well, you turned the church around. No, the church still stayed where it was. And if you look, that chimney matches that chimney.
It sure does. Absolutely.
So when they tore down the 1823 church, old white church, you could actually see where the old window frames were in the 1823 church. If you look up at the top, I believe a couple of podcasts ago, we also talked about the top of the steeple that Bart Kimmel found on the trash pile. And if you look right, there it is on the top of the 1823 church.
It is, there it is. It's in the exact middle of this mural at the very, very top.
In fact, they had to increase the top of the mural to get it in there.
They sure did.
They made a little bulge in it. And then if you go further to the right-hand side, still at the top of it, you see our current sanctuary. And then to the right of that, you see the Family Life Center. So that takes you church-wise across the top of the mural. It takes you through the churches that have been at this location over these 250 years. Now, drop down just slightly on the mural, and you will see a horse-drawn wagon pulled by two horses and with some people depicted on the wagon. That was the picture we have of that came out of the building committee that had come to Freedburg to help build Freedburg up.
So that's technically the building committee on this.
That was the building
wagon
committee that worked on the 1823 church.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And it's right in front of it. If you move to the right a little bit further, you see depiction of a love feast in the 1823 church. Before it was torn down, Freedburg celebrated its 200th anniversary in 1973.
I was thinking this looked very familiar. Is there a photograph of these ladies serving the love feast?
Yes, ma'am,
in the anniversary book for 200?
It's like I said, everything you see on here, we've got a photograph to back it up. So for the 200th anniversary in 1973, it was decided that for the anniversary love feast, the Deaners would dress in period costume. So the women and the men both dressed in period costume for love feast that year. So that's what's depicted here almost in the center of it. If you move to your right a little bit further, you see the band being depicted in the graveyard. In front of the band is a graveyard. And it shows a few of the stones, Adam Spock's headstone and George Hartman's headstone, Maria Spock, Zimmerman, and a few of the other founding families were in the graveyard. And there's a band most likely depicted playing at Easter, because if you look, the graves all have flowers on them. So it's most likely during a Easter service.
Okay, and you can see the brass instruments that the band are playing in the mural as well.
That's the way I knew it was a band.
Oh, yes.
Those brass instruments, just they stand out in it.
They sure do.
So, and then if you move to your right a little bit further and drop down just slightly, you see the old choir loft from the 1823 church, and the choir sitting in the loft. And then move over a little bit more, and you see what the current sanctuary looks like around the pulpit area. But it was all white then. The last renovation we did away with all the white in the room. But that was what was built here in the 1970s. This is a little family being baptized here. That's a depiction of John Geisler, who was a preacher at that time. Over to the far right is the organ that's in the sanctuary at this time. So that's a depiction of our current organ. I think one of the things interesting to look at on this, look at that new pickup truck sitting there. Look at that old pickup truck with the building committee over here.
Oh, that's interesting that the transportation is even included in this mural. Now, it's not a very new pickup truck as of right now.
No,
but
no. This mural was done in 2001. But the depiction of the truck, it's much like even the trucks today are, the pickup trucks are.
Very much so. You can definitely see the contrast between then and now.
Even the new sanctuary and the 1823 renovated sanctuary and the original 1823 church, if you look in front of them, there are crowds of people entering the church at each of the church buildings.
Now, do you think that signifies maybe Easter with folks going in and out?
There's a good possibility. We've got a lot of photographs of people outside the building, and we're not sure, you know, what the occasion was. Very well could have been Easter.
Okay.
Very well. Now, under the organ, directly below the organ, is the Rudolf Christ urn that is on loan to Old Salem. Rudolf Christ was the top potterer in Salem at the time, and he made this beautiful urn and put a poem on the bottom of it about the love feast. And I think we have discussed in much previous podcast about that, but the original urn is on loan to Old Salem Incorporated, and they have it on display in the Horton Center now. If you move on over back towards the left, you'll come across the 1823 cornerstone for the church. And it is still sitting out here on the sidewalk, right where it would have been if the old church had still been here. Then it depicts a graveyard going into God's Acre from here, the gates. Then you move over here in front of the Rock House, and this is the Salem Confederate Band. It's a depiction of them. They came out of Salem as bandsmen from the Moravian Church during the Civil War. They lost their horns one time, I think at Gettysburg, they lost all of their horns. But they didn't fight, they were musicians, and they were there to uplift the soldiers. And they were also, during time of battle, they were also used as stretcher bearers.
Oh,
so they,
okay.
They kind of like the medics of today. But they were there primarily to uplift the spirits of the soldiers.
Wow, so they were kind of missionaries in a way, because they were there kind of playing their music.
They were not there to fight.
They were
there to provide music for the troops. We're about to get through with this thing. I save one part of it till last. You will notice down in the lower left hand of the mural are three young boys with their black flat-brimmed hats on. We have pictures from, I'm wanting to say 1881, that depicts these little boys in the pictures. But there were several of them out at the edge of the picture. So these boys are still at the edge of the picture. You'll notice the one on the far left is carrying a trumpet in his hand. So he is going to eventually become a member of the band here.
Oh, he is.
And the thing I really love about him is his stance. He is standing there with his arm outside the mural, outside the framework of the mural, looking into the future.
Well, look at that. I have never paid attention to the direction that he is looking, and I have looked at this mural for a long time.
Yeah, he's looking. He's looking towards the future. He's back in his present time, but he's looking forward to other times that will take place at Friedberg. And he's got his horn with him, got his arm outside the picture.
What a great nod that gaps the future into the past.
That's what this whole mural does. It transitions from the very first church all the way across the top to the new churches, to what we currently use. Then midway through your transportation, then you've got your love feast with period costumes, your Easter services in the graveyard, and then over to the new transportation. And then you got the Adams Bach Rock House with the Civil War band in front of it. Then you've got the modern day choir loft, and then you've got our current organ. So it all pulls together in this small space.
That is fascinating, Jimmy. Wow, it really is. It's everything. It is our church history wrapped up in one spot.
So if you ever want to sit down, talk about this mural, get a hold of Pat Atkins. She's an expert on it.
So Jimmy, thanks for walking through this mural. I appreciate you telling the story and kind of pointing out these little items. Now, question for you, how long has this mural been here?
The mural was painted in 2001. The Family Life Center, the cornerstone on it is 1999, and of course it took a couple of years to build the building, but this mural was commissioned to go at this location in the Family Life Center. And like I said, it's dated 2001.
That's great. And was there any special committee or anything that got this commissioned?
There was, but I don't know that much about who did it.
Okay. I can see some artist signatures here kind of at the bottom of the mural, but they're fancy. They're artist signatures, so they're kind of hard to read, but we definitely want to thank those artists for their sharing their talents through this mural, because it's a great addition to the Family Life Center and the church facility in general. And, you know, as part of the 250th anniversary, this is just such a nice piece to kind of look back and see our history without even words. You can kind of figure it out if you look at it, but it's so nice to have the context of it.
And I'm sure that when this podcast is done, someone will hear it that has more knowledge than I do on the artist's name and some of the details that went into the commissioning of this mural. And I'm sure they will contact me or you or somebody and give us that information, and I would love to have more information on this.
The history here at the church, we're always finding new tidbits, and we're building on top of it. So yeah, absolutely. If anyone has any insight additionally that we haven't talked about, we'd love to know more about this mural. And I just want to extend the invitation that we are actually having an event here at the church on September the 23rd. It's actually the Walk to the Rock House event. And part of the event is going to be an afternoon that the church is open that people can come and visit and kind of take a look at some of the historical items here at the church. And one of the things that folks can do from 1 to 3 is actually come and take a look at the mural. And we're going to have a volunteer here that can also walk you through the mural and talk you through it and answer any questions that you might have about the mural as well. So I want to encourage you to come to that event, the Walk to the Rock House, on September 23rd, if you want to take a look here at the mural. But if you're a church member, take a look at it. Really step back and really take each piece of this mural in detail and take a deep look at it.
Well, see what the mural has to say.
Exactly. I like the way you put that, Jimmy. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with the mural. I've really enjoyed it, and I think our listeners will too. And we'll make sure that we post a photo of the mural so that you guys can see what this mural looks like as well while we talk through it. Jimmy, thank you so much for joining us once again on the podcast, and we look forward to having you on again.
I enjoy talking about the history of Freedburg. It's interesting.
There's so much of it, so we greatly appreciate you sharing all this information with us. We want to welcome back to the podcast Ray Lambeth. We had so much fun and we had so much information to share in episode one. You've agreed to come back for episode two, which we're so grateful for. Talked about growing up here at Freedburg, and let's transition maybe more into your adulthood at Freedburg. As a lifetime member, I'm assuming you've held some leadership roles along the way.
Yes, I've been blessed a few times. I served on the Board of Trustees 12 years total, not consecutively. One of my most memorable experiences and most enjoyable and meaningful experiences while serving on the trustees was the call process back in 2013. It was a bittersweet memory, obviously. Our dear Pastor Tom had announced his retirement. So we were tasked to go through the call process as prescribed by the PEC, which was a little more arduous than we had thought it needed to be, but there it didn't matter. We did it. We interviewed virtually every member in the church with their thoughts on things they'd like to see, characteristics they'd like to have in a new minister. So at the end of the day, we ended up with who we knew we were going to anyway. The good Lord had told us, Pastor Jim.
And he was the associate pastor at the time.
And he was the associate pastor, yes. So that the call process was a little more complicated than we would have wished it to be, but I think we all learned from it, and it helped each one of us down the road. But another part of the call process a little later was to find a new associate minister. So, and here again, it's the trustees and elders that are in the process with direction from the PEC. We, elder friend of mine and I, had heard a little birdie had whispered in our ear the name of Dan Nelson, who was pastor at Fulp Moravian. And I had never been to Fulp, had heard of it many times. So we, Keith Freitag and I, decided one Sunday morning to go and just visit Fulp Moravian and see what was going on. And so we go walking in. We did make a mistake of We didn't know we were making a mistake, but we walked in in our Sunday suits that we wear. And that's a funny looks, but
you were just a little overdressed, it sounds like.
Well, a little bit, but what a sweet church, what sweet people. We would explain that if people asked, and a lot of them did, that we simply like to go and explore and visit new Moravian churches we'd never visited before. People sort of gave us these sideways glances, but anyway, we thought we had done a good sales job, but we were so Dan, we were very impressed, and to this day, I still have the bulletin from that service, and I have notes about what he preached about and a few little things that we picked up that we found so pleasing. I remember walking out the door and shaking hands with him, and he sort of looking at us sideways, but thank God we've been looking at him in the pulpit here for the last 10 plus years, and been a real blessing. So I do count that in my trustees' experiences the most gratifying. I did serve as a deaner for 20 plus years carrying coffee. My father was a head deaner, and when I was younger, he always wanted me to carry coffee. For whatever reason, I didn't want to carry coffee. But later on, I was asked, and I did. and really enjoyed it immensely. We have a great time doing it. Then back in 2016, I believe, we were having issues finding someone to run after Larry Payne's term had expired. So I became head deaner for the next 6 years, and that was a very interesting experience, an enjoyable experience, and was pleased that I did it. Few issues here and there, but the rewards far, it's like anything, there's nothing that runs totally smooth, but the love feast tradition in the Moravian Church is like the band. You can't do without it and don't want to do without it. It's just an integral part. I was so pleased to have had the opportunity and took advantage of it.
Absolutely, and I know just from being around on Love Feast Sundays and Love Feast events that there's a lot of fellowshipping that goes on in the kitchen prior to you guys coming out and serving coffee. So I'm sure you've got some great memories from that.
Well, that's a good point, and there's also a lot of good fellowship going on behind on the wall behind the pulpit. One of the head deaner's jobs is to referee the noise back there as best you can, because it. Sometimes we were scared we're going to drown out what's being said out in the church. I start to say parsonage, out in the sanctuary. It gets a little rowdy back there at times, but you know the aroma of coffee does things to people.
It does. It does. It's just part of Love Feast. And actually, in the previous segment to this podcast, we talk extensively about the Love Feast. Jimmy's talked about Love Feast tickets and how. Previously, they used to serve 2 cups of coffee at some point in Freeburg history, which is really interesting. But with your term, can you imagine serving 2 cups of coffee?
No.
I can't either. But we're gracious for you being head deaner for years, a couple years, and leading that charge, because we know that there's a lot that goes into that
position. A lot of moving parts, but it's at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun. I can't imagine serving 2 cups. Those people are a lot stronger than we are. Those things are heavy.
Yes, I've always wondered, how heavy are those trays?
They're probably, I'm going to say 25, 28 pounds, depending on how full you fill the cups.
Wow.
They're pretty heavy. And a little tidbit that a lot of people don't realize with those, and I don't know if Jimmy talked about this or not, when the lady deaners are removing the cups, you're holding the tray level. Okay, so a lot of the ladies like to take the cups off from the front, their front. So they're the first row that they encounter. Well, if you take them off from that point to the back of the tray, back towards my body, actually the tray wants to start flipping back towards me. Then it gets heavier, believe it or not. If you're taking coffee off, it gets heavier. So that's a little boring tidbit about coffee. If you're ever a lady deaner and you're taking off the cups, take some off the front, then take some off the back, and that way. It makes it a lot easier on us old guys.
Well, thanks for that little tidbit.
Yeah, a little.
It's, you know, it's experience for you there.
I mentioned earlier that the Reverend Truett Chadwick baptized me as a baby. Don't remember it myself. And also, a little tidbit that some people may or may not know, Truett Chadwick was born and raised up on Old Salisbury Road. If you go to the end of Freeburg, turn left, going towards town on Old Salisbury, he was raised in the first house on the left. His mother was a school teacher at Griffith, but he left before I really have any real memories of him. I knew him later in life. In fact, I was very close to his son at one time. He was Truett Chadwick Jr. was a sheriff at one time. But the first minister, and I think most people in my generation that probably said that, I know they've said it, that Bill Marshall was the first one we really have a lot of recollection of. He was the minister, the preacher, when a group of us joined the church on Palm Sunday. I was 12 years old, so that would have been 1961. Could have been 1960, I'd have been 11, but I think that's when it was. And there was a gaggle of us. There really was. It was a big crowd. Now, the catechism back in those days, not talking specifically about the catechism, but the Reverend Marshall, he performed all that pre-joining process himself and was very thorough, and he would pose some pretty deep questions to us. I can't right now tell you one specifically, but But he really made you think, and he made you realize what it was you were doing. Very special man. He was the first minister that, and this is, I'm sure this is coming out, he was the first minister to live in our new parsonage. And he was a single man. On Sunday nights at Youth Fellowship, we would all go over. There were shuffleboard marks in the floor. We'd go and play shuffleboard and drink Pepsis and have some snacks and stuff. He was a vivacious. I don't have any idea what his age was. He wasn't really young, but he was young. This happened after he left Friedberg. He married Colleen Ryerson, who her family grew up Friedberg. She's the aunt of Lisa Boger and Pam Burgess. Their father Charlie was her brother, and of course Robert Ryerson, and who was a Moravian minister. And so anyway, he married Colleen Ryerson, and my understanding is they live in Goldsboro now. But they moved and they preached at some churches up in the Northern Province. One tidbit that I remember, I wish I knew the years, but he was on Jeopardy. It was the original Jeopardy, and he won a show. He was very cerebral, very highly educated man.
Well, that's a fun fact.
Yeah. When he was here, I'm from 9 to 10, 11, 12 years old, but I remember at one sermon that he preached. And I can't tell you I remember that many sermons, and I'm sorry, Jimmy and Dan, but I do take a lot of notes on your stuff. He was preaching a sermon on something, but he was using an example of God was having a conversation with this man, and he told this man that for the next 24 hours, every inch of land you can cover in 24 hours is yours. So this man takes off running from here to here nonstop, 24 hours nonstop, covering all the land he could see. He's covered it. It's getting time, the 24 hours is about up, and he has covered just thousands of acres. And then all of a sudden, he falls over dead. He inherited exactly what he got, the 6 feet. And I'll tell you, as a kid, I guess the reason I paid so much attention to it, I'm trying to envision this person running around doing that, thinking, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Then the punchline hits, and it paints such a vivid memory today that we, unfortunately, most of us, we run around our lives trying to do the same thing. But at the end of the day, we go across the road over there and we get our little white stone. And I really do have that memory. I've talked about it a number of times. Reverend Henry Lewis followed Bill Marshall, thought the world of Reverend Lewis. My most vivid memory of him was that he was a builder, sort of. When I say builder, I mean things happened when he was here. We built the movement to build the fellowship hall, the new fellowship hall, things like that. So I would say he was trying to move us into another era. The world was changing. I'm talking about there were a lot of people moving out here, and we had to enhance our facilities, and he moved us along in that direction. And also, a very important thing he did was that he married Marjay and me in 1982 in the sanctuary here. And then we had our premarital studies with him and whatnot, and he was really an interesting man. So I'll always remember that. And then Norwood Green, the Reverend Norwood Green, followed Mr. Lewis, the Reverend Lewis, and Norwood was the first preacher I had experienced in Friedberg that would get out from behind the pulpit. My wife grew up in the Baptist church, and I'd been to a few Baptist churches. And Norwood, he would get a little verbose and animated, and I liked it. He didn't go overboard. It was just a new twist, and that was great. In fact, I graduated from high school with his son, and I still see him occasionally. Worth Green, who was the minister over at New Philadelphia for a number of years. Norwood was just a wonderful man. I don't know. I ran into him all the time and had numerous conversations with him that would last a lot longer than we ever imagined. He was just such a dear man. John Geisler followed Reverend Norwood, and Reverend Geisler's term here, for the most part, I didn't attend church that much because, here again, life got in the way. I had a job that I worked crazy hours. I was in college and I was working nights, 40 hours a week, and unfortunately work on Saturday nights and Sunday nights and stuff. But I was here enough. I really respected him. He was a good minister, very music oriented, which is wonderful. His kid had great kids. His son, the Right Reverend Chris Geisler, who spoke at our 250th service, which was wonderful. And he's also enshrined in our Family Life Center on the mural there. So that's really great. I really regret that I didn't get to spend more time being with him. And then along came Tom, the Reverend Tom Shelton. Well, I didn't know Tom Shelton, even though he grew up in Winston-Salem, he went to North Forsyth. My Aunt Pearl Shore, Martha Thomas's mother, and my mother's most favorite aunt, her and her husband were on a trip to Florida. There was a call process going on, and I think Tom had been called, but he hadn't moved up here yet. So Aunt Pearl and Uncle Bill went to the church in Florida where Tom was preaching, and I remember her coming back and calling Mother, and she said, "Well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't know how good a preacher he is, but she said, I can tell you one thing, we're going to have the best looking Moravian minister in the Southern Province."
That's great.
So Tom, if you're listening, I hope you blush. But I don't really know what else you say about Tom that had been said. He was such a dear man, is such a dear man. I'm so proud that he's a bishop, such a well-deserved accolade. He's the minister to the ministers, and the ministers are blessed to have him in that role. In the mid-90s, I was having a few medical issues, and I always tried to, whatever procedure I was going to have, I always tried to be first in the batter's box. And Marjorie and I were never able to get to the waiting area for whatever procedure it was I was having. Normally, this would be 5:30 in the morning or something like that. Never. The first two or three times to get in there, and there's Tom waiting on us. Well, finally, I fixed him up. I gave him a wrong time one time, and I was able to get there before he was. But you really had to work to beat Tom to get to the hospital. You just never forget those kind of things. Now, this happened on June 13th, 1998. And there's two things about that date. This is the wedding of Judy Fishel Joyce's oldest son, Jason, and his wife, Felicia. So we're in attendance, and Tom is officiating, and he's come out, the best man and the groom have come out. So Tom is standing up there in his surplus, and I'm back on my row 7 where I sat for 15 years. And all of a sudden, I see Tom reach down to his right side, kind of like a Western gunslinger getting ready to draw his gun for the OK Corral or something. And then I see his eyes enlarge, and he realizes he doesn't have his mic control. He doesn't have his mic, period.
Oh, no.
I see this. I look over to the soundboard, which then was back over in the right corner, and I think it was Gary Jackson. I see Gary. Gary knows. He knows what's going on. I go over, and the bridesmaids and groomsmen, they're coming in. I go over to the soundboard. I get the mic, and I jump in line with the groomsmen and the bridesmaids coming down the right aisle.
Wait. So you joined the wedding party?
I joined the wedding party. I didn't know what else to do. I mean, Tom, I could see this look in his face, on his eyes. So I do this and just solemnly walk with those people. I go around him, pass it off and I go back, sit down, and nothing was ever said, period, about it. It was,
oh, wow.
But I'll never forget it. Now, the other reason I remember that date, Herman Foltz, who I've talked about a few times already, he did an updated Descendants of Adam Spock that go back through the 10th generation, I believe. But he had just published it in 1998. So The reception for Jason Joyce and Felicia Joyce, that reception was held over at Judy and Robbie's house. I was fortunate that Herman and his wife Doris sat at my table and we're talking and I'm asking him about his book. And I said, I have to get one of those. And he says, well, I have some in a car. I said, well, golly, let me buy one. After the wedding, I go by and I have that. In fact, it's in the room with us right now, an autographed copy from Herman Fultz that day. So there were two memories that day. But the look on Tom's face when he reached down beside of him and realized, uh-oh.
Oh,
that's
pure panic.
As we say, that's priceless.
Yes. Oh, but you saved the day.
Yeah. And I never did see the replay of that. It's probably for the best. But I didn't know anything else to do except that. That's what I would have wanted somebody to do for me. But as I've said, Tom, after 29 years, decided it was time to go and retire to the farm. And what a wonderful experience they've had, I know. And we see them quite a bit, and we're always so pleased. Being followed our dear Pastor Jim. I could talk a long time about Pastor Jim. I remember him from when he was an associate here back in the late 80s, and I knew his father-in-law very well, Clint Bodford, a dear man. But Jimmy, I consider him just a dear friend, a confidant, a comrade. Just, we're so blessed to have him and Dan. I haven't said this yet, but Freeburg Moravian Church, we are the shining light in the Moravian Church. And anybody that's listening hopefully knows that, or anybody that's had the experience to be at Freeburg Moravian Church in the last umpteen years, but especially since COVID, to see how we have come back from that, and not only come back, we have thrived. The good Lord has led so many wonderful people to Freeburg from so many other Moravian churches that unfortunately don't provide the manna that they're looking for, and they find it here. They love it here. We love the fact they're here. I've never seen this many people come together so rapidly and mesh just like an old glove. They're like friends that you've had forever. It's a real blessing. That's all I can say.
It is, and you can definitely tell that they're in the right place. Not that they were ever in the wrong place, but they're in the right place because God has placed them here, and they are thriving in the different ministries throughout the church, and they just got plugged in, and they're wonderful, and yeah, they're like old friends. It's, you know, they may have only joined a year or two ago, but it feels like you've known them forever.
Forever. It's just been an experience that I would have never expected. I'm proud of it. I mean, it's in Freeburg, we stand, our preachers. This is a rules and regulation of Freeburg Moravian Church from 1950. And if you were going to join the church, these are the rules that you agreed to live by. And I'm not going to bore you with reading too much.
Okay.
The preamble says, the foundation of our doctrine is based on the Holy Scriptures. The Old and the New Testament are and shall remain the only rule of our faith and practice. We venerate them as God's word, which he spake to mankind of old time in the prophets, and at last in his Son, and by the apostles, to instruct us unto salvation through faith in Jesus Christ, in Christ Jesus. We are convinced that all truth that declares the will of God for our salvation are fully contained therein. That sums it up. That's what it was in 1950. That's what it is here in 2023. We can all be so blessed that God has poured out his mercy on Freeburg Moravian Church, that we are the Hill of Peace. We're the lighthouse in the storm that Jimmy alluded to a few years ago when the guy was in the ship and he was headed towards the rocks, and the lighthouse was able to point out you need to turn. And we are the lighthouse in the Moravian Church. I'll go so far as to say in the world. We really are. And that's not bragging, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends. It really isn't. That's just the way I feel.
Well, that was some awesome insights. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've really enjoyed hearing about your time being a head deaner, hearing a little bit about the pastors that have been here during your time at Freeburg, and sharing some great insights. Like, this has been a lot of fun. So I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking, and I hope our listeners will feel the same.
Well, thank you, Laura. And I can tell you it's really been enjoyable, and I've really enjoyed this as much or more than you have, I suspect. Had no idea that I could go back and draw these kind of memories out. Now, with that being said, some of these were written down, a lot of them were, but as you get to going, more and more things open up. So I'm glad to know that my brain is not totally caught up with my birth certificate yet, but at some point it will.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Welcome to the podcast, Zoe Hopkins, who's going to be reading the Moravian Daily Text for Friday, September the 15th.
My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my fierce anger, for I am God and no mortal. The Holy One in your midst, Hosea. God will always be childing, nor forever angry be. God will deal with us in mercy, not according to our sins. Jesus said, I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. John 12:47. God removes all our transgressions, for as east is from the west, for the grace of God is great as heaven stands high above the earth. Merciful One, we find it hard to comprehend that we are created in your image, not the other way around. While we are inclined by our human nature to judge, you, by your divine nature, delight in graciousness. May we remember who made us and whom we belong. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us once again for this episode of the History from the Hill of Peace. We've made it to the end of today's historical journey, and I want to say a huge thank you for Jenny for joining us once again, and also for Ray Lambeth for coming back on the podcast as well. A huge thank you to Zoe Hopkins for reading our Moravian Daily Text. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode, and while you're at it, follow Freeburg Moravian Church on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and be sure to check out our church website, freeburg.church. If you live in the Winston-Salem, North Carolina area, or if you're visiting, please plan to join us on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. We'd love for you to worship with us here on the Hill of Peace.